Bava Basra, Perek Tes, Mishnah Vav, 9-6. The previous Mishnah took us off topic, talking about gifts that went for Sivlonos to the Kala before her wedding. We're now returning back to our primary topic of the Perek, which is dealing with how to allocate resources after someone dies or not, outside of the general basic rules of Yerusha, Nachla, as they were described in the previous Perek. So here we have the Shchiv Meira, the person on his deathbed. Literally, shchiv means to lie down, shochev, and he's lying, and meira from bad things, so meaning he thinks he's going to die. So we've seen this before. There's a basic rule that there's a special tekanas chachamim that the shchiv meira may verbally, alone, through dibur, through just speech, allocate his resources, his estate, and that should be binding, as divrei shchiv meira keksuvin umesurin. The words alone are as if he formally wrote them down and handed over like in a binding kinyan. And the idea is that we want to minimize his anxiety and stress while he is in this precarious state, lest he die or make him die sooner. So we let him have his mind put to rest that at least he can arrange his financial affairs. Now, the rule is that a shchiv meira, if he relies on this mechanism of simply dibur, of simple verbally allocating his resources to all his whoever he wants to give it to. If he doesn't die, so then we say, listen, he gave away all his stuff because he thought he was going to die. He was relying on this special Takana Sacham that Dibur should work. He didn't die, so the gifts aren't given, and everything snaps back to how it always was. And if he wants to give stuff away, he'll have to use the formal, usual mechanisms of Kenyan. Our mission is going to discuss not that. Our mission is going to discuss where the person was a Shchiv Meira. He thought he was on his deathbed. He did, however, not just rely on speech, but did a formal binding kinyan. So if he had the farm in Montana, he wanted to give it to his favorite nephew, and he either gave him, wrote the deed out and gave it to the nephew, or, the nephew's not around, so instead of being a stark matana, gift contract, that would make it the nephew's, instead he makes it a star raya, memorialize the fact in front of two witnesses. He did, let's say, a Kenyan Sudar. He lifted up a handkerchief, transferring rights of the field and the contract of the farm in Montana. And then the contract would simply say, Reuven and Shimon were witness to the fact that this fellow in his death, but the uncle gave the field to his nephew, and this contract is not a contract, but it's a document that confirms, as a Shtar Raya, confirms that it was gifted to the nephew over there in Montana. Now, our Mishnah wants to ask the question, what happens if the fellow, the benefactor, ends up not dying? And he claims, yes, of course it was a binding kinyan, but that was only because I thought I was dying. And since I wasn't dying, it shouldn't be binding. So now what? Do we say it essentially was like a gift made under false pretenses, and therefore he can renege on the gift? Or do we say, no, listen, a gift is a gift, but it's a binding gift. It was legally binding through the normal mechanisms. And therefore, the recipient of the gift can keep it. So says our Mishnah. We have to, if the benefactor was explicit, if he said, I'm only gifting this to my nephew because I'm dying. Or even if he says, listen, look, I'm dying. So, and I want to give my nephew this instead of going to my sons for whatever reason, so I'm giving it now, as a gift from my deathbed, anything like that. So then, of course, it's clear that what's motivating him is the fact that he's dying. But if he doesn't say any of those things, so now how do we know that was what was motivating? We have to sort of figure out what was going on inside his head. Maybe he just was giving a gift, and he would, at the time he gave it, he would be happy that it would stand, even if he ended up not dying. How do we know? So says the Mishnah, well, Shchiv Meira, if a person is on his deathbed, he thinks on his deathbed, Shekasav kol nechasav lacherim, and he gives away his stuff to other people, let's say his stuff to his nephew over there instead of it to his sons, but Vishir karka kol shehu, but he retained something for himself. Literally, it means he left over any amount of land for himself. As far as if the land is not essential, it could be he said, I'm giving everything away except what's inside my wallet, I'm keeping for myself. There is a question, how much is kol shehu, how much is any amount? Kol shehu normally means any amount, even $1 worth. But I'll come back to halacha that's in machlokas in the Rishonim and the Poskim, what that means exactly. So then, since he's retaining something for himself, Matnaso kayemes, his gift stands, meaning even if he gets better, the fact that he retained some of his assets for himself would suggest strongly that he was giving it not because he thought he was dying. Because if he really thought he was dying, why did he retain stuff for himself? What's that going to help him? And therefore, we assume that the gift was a bona fide gift, the contract stands as it's written, and therefore the nephew gets the gift from the uncle, and the uncle can't back out of it. On the flip side, lo shi'ir karka kol shehu, if the uncle, the benefactor, didn't retain anything for himself, he gave all the stuff away, so then, ein matnaso kayemes, then his gift wouldn't stand, because it's clear nobody denudes himself of all his assets, so obviously what was motivating this fellow is that he thought he was going to die. Since he thought he was going to die, he gifted the stuff away, but now that he didn't die, so those gifts were made under false pretenses, and they're not gifts after all. Just want to put parenthetically here, I want to contrast this. If a person does a sale, and then circumstances change after the sale, the person can't go back on it. But here it's a gift. So the gift, we're saying, is clearly motivated from the fact he thought he was dying, and he wouldn't have given it if he wasn't dying. Okay, so that's the first part of our Mishnah, which I'm going to sum up here in L'Halacha. If a person makes it explicit he's gifting because he's dying, he doesn't die, the gift isn't binding. Okay, even if there's a binding kinyan. In the event that he gifts and it's with a binding kinyan, but he gives everything away, then it's clear he thinks he's dying, even though he didn't say it explicitly, and again, it won't be binding, he could renege if he gets up from his deathbed. Now, the Mishnah says, the Chiddush of the Mishnah is, if he retains some stuff for himself, then clearly he didn't think he was dying, or probably didn't think he was dying. We can't be sure, I shouldn't say clearly. He probably, I should say, thought he was dying, because otherwise, why is he retaining stuff for himself? There could be a good answer to that question, for example. He could say, yeah, I retained stuff because I was happy to let the normal rules of Yerusha kick in, and that what I didn't give away go to my normal conventional heirs as opposed to my nephew. But anyways, we don't know that. What we can see in front of us here is that he's retaining stuff. We don't know why he's retaining stuff, so we have to assume that the gift is binding. He did a formal kinyan. Okay, now how much does he have to retain? The Mishnah says kol shehu. Kol shehu under normal circumstances means any amount. And that's how the Rif understands it. And the Shulchan Aruch, the Machaber, goes like the Rif. So if he retains even just, not even land, but just, you know, $5 in his wallet, so what's the $5 for? It must be he thinks he may not die. And therefore, the gift will be binding. On the flip side, the Rosh holds that he has to retain for himself an amount of assets that would support him, be able to support him in the event that he didn't die. So that means enough field to support him to live off of, or enough cash in his wallet to live out the rest of his days from those savings. If not for that, so then we have no indication he thinks he's going to live, because what's $5 going to do the guy if he survives? Nothing. So therefore, if he doesn't retain that much to support himself, should he not die, it's not considered to be enough to make it that to indicate that he thought he wasn't going to die, and therefore his gift wouldn't stand. That's how the Ramah paskins like the Rosh, so and significant machlokos over there. Now, the Mishnah continues on, and it says a little bit of a different case. Now we're talking about a case where a person is writing contracts. He, he's gifting in a way that he is, let's say he's sending he does a gift to his nephew in Montana from his home, his maybe sickbed, maybe deathbed, we don't know. Now you'll see it's ambiguous. And in the, he does the contract that is sent to the document that's sent to the nephew says, you know, due to the unfortunate circumstances, I'm giving you my home in the ranch in Montana. So now, if he would have written explicitly, since I'm on my deathbed and I'm dying, so it would be clear that it's only a gift because he thought he was dying, and therefore, if he didn't die, he could renege. On the other side, if it wasn't ambiguous at all, it was just a formal gift, so then now when he goes to court and says, I want my house, my farm back in Montana, so the nephew will say, what are you talking about? It's binding, it's mine. And you're just now having second thoughts and make up an excuse saying, oh, I thought I was on my deathbed. Who said you were? But the document that in question here is an ambiguous one where it's could be interpreted to say he was motivated by his thought of him dying, but it's not explicitly the case. Okay? So he wants to back out of it now. He wants to back out of it, and they're in court. So they're in court over who should get the... And this is what they're saying. What they're claiming is, the uncle says, it's my farm in Montana. I only gifted it to my nephew because I thought I was dying. And the nephew says, no, you're making that up. You just have, you know, remorse. You have second thoughts about gifting it. But you gave it at the time, and what's mine is mine. You can't take it back now. So the question then becomes, well, since the nephew says, no, you were fine at the time. You didn't think you were dying. And the uncle is saying, no, I thought I was dying, and that's why I gave it to you. So the question is, on whom is the burden of proof? Who has to, you know, who do we give it to if we have no witnesses and nothing more to go on? The uncle, the benefactor, could claim that it was a mistake, he thought it was dying, and we believe him, or the nephew saying, listen, the contract is a contract that's binding, and like he's just having second thoughts. So says the Mishnah, lo kasva bash chiv meira. He gives a contract that's would be normally binding to the benefactor, we'll call him the nephew, and it doesn't say explicitly what's motivating it is that the uncle thinks he's dying. Hu omer shchiv meira haya. So now they're in court, the uncle says, well, I thought I was dying, and that's why I gave it, but I didn't die, so therefore I want it back. Vehein, but the recipients, the nephew, says, omrim bari haya. No, you're making that up. At the time you gave it, you weren't on your deathbed. You knew you weren't your deathbed, and now you just are having second thoughts, and now you want to claim that you're on your deathbed. So, according to the first sheet of Reb Meir, tzarech lahavi raya shaya shchiv meira, div Reb Meir. Reb Meir says the burden of proof is on the uncle, the benefactor, to prove that he thought he was dying. Okay? Hold that thought as to the lamedus why. And the chacham disagree. The chacham say no. Chacham omrim hamot mechaver la varaya. You, nephew, want to take this out of your uncle's hands and keep it for yourself? You have to bring a proof that he wasn't a shchiv meira at the time he wrote it. So the machlok is over who the burden of proof sits on. Now, the lamedus here is as follows. The rule is that we keep property in its with its chazaka, it prevails. The chazaka meaning what I translate as status quo. Now, there really are two competing status quos here. On the one hand, you have what's called the chazaka dahashta, and that is what Reb Meir is focused on. The chazaka dahashta means the current status quo, the current chazaka. Meaning, the Bezin says, listen, we look with our own eyes, what do we see right now in front of us? We see a healthy uncle, we see a binding contract, so we should presume that's what the status quo is, and if someone wants to change what we're seeing in front of our eyes, so the uncle looks healthy now, he left the burden of proof is on the uncle to show, well, he is healthy now, but he thought he was dying back then. On the other hand, if you recall back to the beginning of the Sechta, we kind of had this issue of like the Marakama, the last known, when it comes to real estate, the last known uncontested owner, he's the one who's the Muchzak. He's the one who is like the status quo with him as being the undisputed owner. And if someone wants to change that, he'll need to bring a raya. And that's kind of what the chacham are saying here. They're saying, listen, we know the uncle was the owner. Now the nephew's claiming this is binding. The uncle says, no, it wasn't. And he explains that ambiguity in the contract when he said something like, you know, due to the unfortunate events, is referring to the fact he thought he was dying. And the burden of proof now is on the nephew to show that the uncle wasn't in fact the shchiv meira at the time. Otherwise, the uncle, being the marakam, will be able to dispute the contract and say the gift wasn't meant to be binding. Again, it's a gift. It's not a sale. Okay? Halacha will follow the chachamim, meaning that the motzi in this case is considered to be the nephew, and he, alav haraya, he is going to have to bring proof that the uncle, in fact, didn't think he was a shchiv meira and that he was dying if the nephew is to keep the gifted piece of property in question.